Music by Moondog. You were just listening to Rabbit Hop, as performed by the Britain Symphonia, conducted by Joanna McGregor, who made the arrangement. Exciting stuff. Music of Moondog. Well, I'm here with Gavin Black, and, well, Gavin, you knew Moondog well for the last 22 years of his life. Is that right, approximately?
Yeah, the time is right. I met him in early 77. He died in September of 99. And I want to say that I knew him. I don't know about the word well. I'm not sure. I don't know what sort of claim to make. You've used the word expert a couple of times. I'm not sure. I started to describe before when I first met him. There is a sort of funny story about that. It wasn't the initial moments of this as it unfolded weren't funny to me. But in something like 1972 or maybe early 73, sorry, that's wrong, 74 or 5, I remember I was riding in the subway in New York, and I was reading some magazine, possibly Time magazine, and I encountered the expression, the late Moondog. And I was absolutely, which as we know from everything we've said here today, that wasn't the case. He had not died. He was not the late Moondog. I was really devastated by that because I had known about him for a couple of years. I really liked his music. I had always hoped to meet him someday. It turned out that what had happened was that when he did the thing that I mentioned before of just suddenly deciding to fail to come back to New York and stay in Germany, really at the very last minute, he didn't necessarily tell very many people exactly what had happened. And sometime shortly thereafter, a student journalist, I think from Ithaca College, although that could be absolutely wrong, that's sort of how I remember it, got excited about writing a story about Moondog, came down to New York and began to look for him. And all he heard from anybody was, boy, I don't know where he is. We haven't seen him in months. He doesn't come in anymore, you know, various restaurants or other hangouts where he'd spent time. No one had seen him on his corner. Mm-hmm. Possibly this journalist also went upstate and checked around the neighborhood where his cabin was and so on and so on. So unfortunately, he took it upon himself to write an article saying that Moondog appeared to have died, which was false, but mm-hmm. a few other people picked that up. So that I got in touch with Paul Jordan immediately in some distress. I'm sorry to hear that Moondog has passed away, and I really had hoped to get to know him, et cetera, et cetera. And Paul told me the whole story about Moondog's having moved to Germany and so on. So then, again, cut forward to when I was in Germany, February of 77, I went to visit him. And picking the story up from the phone call that I described earlier last hour, I got on the train. I think it was 4 or 5 hours from where I was staying. Maybe not that long because I did it all in one day. Anyways, I was met at the station by Ilona Gerbel, who was a member of the family that had taken Moondog in when he was more or less living on the street, in fact, or in shelters for a while in Germany. He encountered the Gerbel family, who got interested in him and in his music, and who ended up, first of all, inviting him to live with them, which he did for the rest of his life, and second of all, taking on the job of essentially being his manager. Ilona was his manager. She transcribed a lot of his music from Braille during those years. She got concerts and recording contracts for him and was really largely responsible for the way his career took off at that point. And I spent a really cool day with the two of them. I mean, I don't know whether being young enough is the right thing to say. I was just in the frame of mind where I was completely, you know, blown away and overawed by this. Someone who struck me as being a person for the ages, a really extraordinary composer, just sitting around a table laughing and chatting and telling me stories and so on and so on. Now, he was very, in spite of the, what I think could come across as a kind of forbidding demeanor if you just saw him in a photograph or something, you know, 7 feet tall.
That's
how you felt about it. Right. I think you mentioned that off the air before. And also in spite of the fact that I think it's pretty well known that he could be, and in a way wanted to be, kind of ornery and blunt in the way he talked to people about things, he was also very affable and friendly and had a big laugh and took a lot of you know, interest in what was I doing there and how was Paul and so on, and talked a lot about his music. And he told me various stories, mm-hmm. Probably most of which I don't remember. And again, I was sitting there sort of being in awe, and Ilona was going into the other room and getting music and handing it to me just in her handwriting. Again, the way that his music has gotten preserved and disseminated has been that somebody transcribed it from his Braille notation, a notation that he invented himself, and therefore you had to be taught in order to read it, and wrote it out in hand or eventually got it typeset. Certainly in those days, almost all of his stuff essentially circulated privately in handwritten form, and they gave me piles and piles of music, including The Art of the Canon, several books of it, from which we heard some pieces before, and also including the, I believe I alluded to this before, organ music that he had written expressly for organ, which had pedal parts, and that's obviously a technical thing that makes a piece into an organ piece. But, and he told me a story about being at a new music festival in Paris, and that Philip Glass was also there, and that Philip Glass, according to Moondog, had told his own students who were there that Moondog was the father of modern music, and they all rushed over to meet Moondog and so on, and that seemed to have pleased him a lot. And then, again, in the wake of that, when I came home about a month later, bringing a lot of this music with me and bringing various tapes and LPs, I managed to trigger the MHS record, as I mentioned, and then the next project that I got involved with was organ music of Moondog's. Some of these keyboard pieces played on the organ and some of the new sort of official organ pieces. And that was a long and satisfying process in which I would tape a piece, send the tape to them, to Moondog and Ilona. They would listen to it. He would comment. And some of the time they sent me back written comments, and some of the time they sent me back tapes saying, you know, hi, Gavin, here's what we think about this one. Why don't you play it a little faster, slower,
so
this or that?
So that's how he did that.
That was the supervision that, I mean, the next time, and I can come back to that process a bit in a little while, but the next, so I would phone once in a while on his birthday or some other time, or we would write letters. Mm-hmm. The next time I saw him in person was quite a while later, namely in the fall of 1989, when he came to New York for the only time subsequent to his moving away in 1974 to participate in, I think it was the Next Wave Festival that Philip Glass, or perhaps Philip Glass and Steve Reich, had arranged a sort of Moondog event there, a concert of some of his music that he conducted from a bass drum.
Very interesting.
And he, you know, I went to that concert and I chatted with him some afterwards. And then I think the next day or soon thereafter, he came to my parents' house in New York. And we had a really long dinner, 6 or 8 hours worth of dinner and sitting around chatting.
So he was very friendly, a very nice guy.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, he had a reputation for speaking his mind and not worrying about being diplomatic about expressing opinions. And but I think you can encounter things about that in the book and about other and stories and so on, that he really knew what he wanted artistically and philosophically and was very firm about that. Mm-hmm. But in my experience, also, as I said, had a big laugh and was very friendly and interested in stuff. And
probably your relationship with him, and looking back with a name like Moondog, mm-hmm. You probably look at that as one of your high points in your life.
Well, sure. I mean, it's
just like me when I worked with Alan Hovhaness. We had a similar story when he came to my home and it took hours for my parents to pull us away from the piano. I'm here in the 8 hours. I see a very similar situation.
So you just used the expression, the name Moondog, meaning such an august person whom I admire, and so that's right. But now I'm gonna push that over to a sidetrack. Literally, the name Moondog. We talked a bit earlier about how he chose how and sort of when and why, to some extent, he chose that name. When I, one of the interesting things about the particular moment when I first got to know him in early 1977 is that he and also Ilona Gerbel, who was, you know, his friend and manager at the time, wanted to move him away from using the name Moondog and from the whole kind of Viking image. He had put the Viking costume away, and I think that by and large he kept the Viking costume away from that point on. But he also told me very clearly at that point that he didn't want to be called Moondog anymore, that he wanted to be known as Lewis Hardin, that is to say,
his name.
And Lewis Hardin, a modern American classical, with quotes around that word, composer, not Moondog, a sort of eccentric street person, and that he was very adamant about that.
And when again
was early 1977. He was 60 years old at the time, and 30 years or so into his public career. Now,
go ahead.
That didn't work out. I mean, so the first thing that happened was that the MHS record that we've mentioned a couple of times became, I think, the first and still is the only record that does not describe the composer of the music as Moondog. The word Moondog is on the front cover sort of as an album title, and then it says Instrumental Music of Lewis T. Hardin.
That's right.
And on the back it says, I have it over on the shelf there. I could look at it and get it exactly right, but it says something like All Pieces by Lewis Hardin, copyright, da, da, da. And his statement on that record that he wrote, which is basically or largely about tonality and how important he thinks it is to write tonal music, is signed Lewis Hardin. So I, sitting here, I've been trying to remember to say Moondog said X or Moondog did Y. In my normal life, I think of him as Lewis. I mean, so, because when I knew him, he really just wanted to be known by his name. Again, that didn't work out for his career. I think that they discovered, Lewis and Ilona and other people who were sort of helping them make his career move forward, that he was just too known as Moondog, too entrenched, too well-known as Moondog. So I think they kind of abandoned the idea of not calling him Moondog, but he did quit the Viking costume, I think, pretty thoroughly from there on in. He didn't, groom himself in an exaggeratedly mainstream style. He kept the long beard and the long hair and all that. But and that was part of an effort to create, it's really started this effort with the trip to Germany in the first place that Paul Jordan arranged, where he was presented as a musician and a composer, not a musician in the tradition of anyone you might want to name, Bach or Mendelssohn or Beethoven or Reger or whatever, not an eccentric street person about whom you'd find it kind of funny that he also wrote music. But then that's what Ilona and Lewis, now that I've mentioned this, I'm going to call him Lewis the rest of the way in, I think, worked on for the following 20 years, getting his music actually out there, arranging concerts with orchestras and ensembles and soloists and so on, and kind of moving away from the image without, in the end, abandoning the name.
Yeah. Very interesting.
So,
kind of a transformation when he moved to Germany.
Yes.
Very interesting. We've got some organ music played by you.
Yes, we do.
What would you like to say before we hear them?
Well, so this, after we had put together this Musical Heritage Society LP, and again, as I said, I kind of snuck some pieces, those four of those eight harpsichord pieces that we just heard, onto that record as my fee, in a sense, for having arranged the whole thing. The next project that we came up with was for me to do a full-length LP of organ music, and I worked on those pieces. I, even more than with the harpsichord pieces, we did this back and forth that I described, that I would send him tapes, and he would listen to them and make comments. I think we may have talked on the phone some, but mostly he wrote or taped and sent me back comments. And then eventually we had a very kind of marathon one-day recording session, and I taped all these pieces. And there was, I can't try to go into all the details of this because I didn't know them at the time, and I certainly don't want to misrepresent it, but there was a stage at which this record was also going to be released by the Musical Heritage Society, but they underwent a change in ownership and kind of a change in direction and decided not to release the record. So it never has been released commercially at all. One of the reasons for that is that the tapes underwent some deterioration. I think if anyone's listening who knows about Ampex tape from the late 70s, they'll know what I'm talking about. That tape turned out to have flaws. And so I still hope that someday a way will be found to release this commercially, but at the moment we're listening to several pieces that are just essentially from my private collection. And
have these been aired anywhere before?
Once in a while. Of course I've got some of them on my YouTube channel,
and occasionally
one of them has gone out over the radio or something, but no one, as far as I know, no one sort of has them except me at this point.
Yeah.
And this whole collection of pieces includes some of the, what I've been talking about as official organ pieces, which have pedal parts that are mostly repeated bass lines, making them into what we would call a chaconne or a passacaglia or a ground. And then the stuff that you play in the hands, often with the two hands on separate keyboards of the organ, is canonic, like some of the music we've been hearing. So these are canons over a ground, and the first piece on this selection that we have is one of those. The others are some of the short canons or grounds from some of his keyboard collections. I believe we've queued up about, what?
Seven of them,
lasting about 13 minutes
something like that.
Yes.
So, organ music by Lewis Hardin.
As performed sometimes by known
my
as
guest,
Moondog.
Gavin Black. Music by a Lewis Hardin, otherwise known as Moondog, as performed by my guest, Gavin Black. And Gavin, the last piece had a personal significance.
Yes, that last piece was the, not obviously in my own playing of it, but it was the first Moondog piece I ever heard. It's the piece that Paul Jordan had on the music desk in a day back in around 1971 or two, when I noticed it and asked him what it was, and he played that for me. And so that's sort of the piece that captivated me in the first place. Yes.
Very exciting. So. Very exciting. Well, let's go now just a little bit about Moondog's influence on other musicians.
Sure. Again, I want to zero in on this concept of being an expert to say that I'm not one. I mean, I don't know a lot about other 20th century music, but my impression is that at least through his influence on the minimalist school, his sort of idiom and his approach to harmony and rhythm found its way into certain strains of modern sort of classical, again maybe with quotes around that word, music. So Philip Glass and Steve Reich both New Moondog in, I believe, the late 50s, early 60s in New York. As we mentioned before, he lived with Philip Glass for a while.
And so he knew Glass when he was a kid, you know, like
exactly.
20s, very
That's right.
Young
and,
then.
And the way I used to hear it, and this may have been from a sort of Moondog perspective, was that the two of them, in effect, studied with him, and that he was sort of a mentor and teacher to both of them. Mm-hmm. And the biography of Moondog, called The Viking of Sixth Avenue by Robert Scotto, which is a very thorough and fascinating book, has a preface by Philip Glass talking about his little bit about his experiences with Moondog. And also, there were talking about this classification thing and what is pop music and what is not and what is jazz and what is classical and so on. A number of rock or folk singers or groups picked up on some of Moondog's pieces, like the madrigal All Is Loneliness was performed by Janis Joplin, and there are other things. And I feel as though, just as a very casual listener to stuff, I hear passages in all sorts of non-classical music from the last 50 years that feel Moondog-inspired to me. Now, of course, it doesn't necessarily mean that they were directly Moondog-inspired. They could have been inspired by other things that also inspired Moondog himself. But
I've actually heard a little bit of his music on some commercials here. And
yes,
there,
indeed.
I
think
we did before, the one in...
The Witch of Endor, right?
Yes, that
was
one.
On a commercial
and Birds
for some
Lament.
Car or something. Yeah,
yeah,
that's
I think
right.
I've
that's
heard
right.
that that's one right. also. Sure. Some of the ones from the yes. Columbia
yeah.
record.
Yeah, that's...
And so that's great. And so there's the book. What's the name of the book?
The Viking of Sixth Avenue by Robert Scotto, S-C-O-T-T-O.
And that is like the...
It is like the author. I mean, it was an authorized biography. He worked on it for a mm-hmm. long time with a lot of contact with Moondog himself and everyone.
And how about a good website?
Well, there is a website called Moondog's Corner, and I think the URL is moondogscorner.de. It's a German website, but you can also search on the phrase Moondog's Corner. Very thorough discussion about him and listings of all the records that they've ever been and so on. Really interesting, good stuff.
Very good. Well, now we've got a real treat because we're going to hear some performances by him.
Sure.
With his daughter.
Yes.
Let's explain what we're going to hear.
So there was an event at United Church on the Green in New Haven a long time ago, like sometime in the late 60s, I don't know the exact date, in which they invited Moondog to come and provide the music for the service. So the prelude, the offertory, various other incidental music, and then eventually the postlude of that service were all Moondog pieces. He was there singing, that's the point. We've heard him playing a bit, some of his percussion and other instruments. He is singing these madrigals, and his daughter, June, was singing with him, and Paul Jordan is playing organ and harpsichord and I believe also recorder in some of the pieces. And this was taped, and there are copies of it that have survived, and I have one, and we're going to hear a little bit of it. Now, as I understand it, we're going to start it and listen to some short pieces and then decide when we have
segue
from that into kind of, saying goodbye
yes,
at some point.
Yes, that's right, but this is going
to
be
see how
great.
Much of it we get to.
Yeah, very good. Music by Moondog.
Thank you.
You were just hearing music by Moondog. And Gavin, what were we listening to?
Well, this was a few selections from Moondog's own performances at a church service in the early 70s at United Church on the Green in New Haven. The last piece was the madrigal, Down is Up. Down is up, and so up is down, because the earth is round. There isn't such a thing as up or down. We also heard Nero's Expedition Up the Nile, a couple of other madrigals, and a pastoral for harp, and a canon played on the organ by Paul Jordan.
Okay, so very good. Well, I mean, Gavin, what can I say? This has been a total delight.
Well,
thank you for coming.
It is a great pleasure being here.
I think people got a good idea about this mysterious figure referred to as Moondog.
Yeah, well.
And he's not as mysterious as we thought.
No, not. Unfortunately, of course, he's, you know, receding into history, and it's good that people have memories of him, and there's a fine biography of him. And I want to mention that there is also a full-length documentary about Moondog in, I suppose, essentially in post-production now. I believe it's going to come out this year, later this year, also called The Viking of Sixth Avenue. So keep your eyes out for that.
Will do. Gavin,
it's been a great pleasure being here, and I look forward to being back at some point.
Yeah, well, I think we'll do it again in a year from now. There is tremendous
more material.
Well, I just want to remind you that the MP3 audio sound files for today's entire edition of Classical Discoveries will be posted on my website by this evening. My website address is www.classicaldiscoveries.org. And I will be back on Friday morning between 5:30 and 11 for Treasures of Early Music. And do hope you can join me for that. Thank you so much for joining me. We sign off with a few more minutes of Moondog. Have a wonderful day.